First pictures now coming in from Puerto Rico after taking a direct hit. Hurricane Maria slamming into the island.
When major disasters strike, it's always been the President of the United States' job to arrive on the scene with promises of help.
Emergency management now confirms 100% of Puerto Rico now without power, flooding in every direction.
One official saying the island is destroyed.
He's also there to offer emotional support to locals confronting death and destruction.
I've been to Puerto Rico many times. I've always loved it, and your weather is second to none, but every once in a while you get hit. And you really got hit.
You know, he goes down there, says a few words.
There's a lot of love in this room. A lot of love in this room.
Tosses a few paper towels, shrugs a little bit, and leaves. And then blames the Puerto Rican government for all the problems.
Survival cannot be our new way of life. Mr. Trump, do your job.
Calling it negligent, it seems to be like the understatement of the century.
We've seen it time and again just how vulnerable we are and how wide the chasm is between the powerful and the rest of us.
For over 70 years, our leaders have told us one thing under the bright lights.
The protection of the lives and property of Americans is the responsibility of all public officials.
I care. We're trying.
And it is my first duty as president to protect the American people.
We have it so well under control.
But America's shadow government has spent trillions of dollars on secret plans that serve one premise. When the shit really hits the fan, we're on our own.
I have nothing.
For decades, the government has invested trillions of dollars in a secret plan to save itself while the rest of us die.
Ladies and gentlemen, I wish I had better news for you, but we are facing a storm that most of us have feared.
12 years before Puerto Rico was leveled by Hurricane Maria, a massive storm barrels toward the Gulf Coast.
The warnings get more and more dire, and people in New Orleans are ready to essentially do what they normally do, stay and ride it out. You know, your government is here to protect you. Why should you worry?
The Americans living in its path failed to understand that their lives were in the hands of a government that had prioritized its own survival over their well-being.
There were multiple warnings that this levee system wasn't ready for anything approaching a storm of this magnitude.
The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers started building a levee system to protect New Orleans in 1965. They were supposed to have finished by 1980, but it was nowhere near complete when the Category 3 Hurricane Katrina descended on the Crescent City and the waters began to rise.
Katrina was predictable, it was preventable, we could have mitigated the damage, we could have rebuilt quicker. Homeland security is a term that emerged after 9/11. And after 9/11, we saw how insecure our homeland was.
The U.S. government had other priorities. A so-called global war on terror, first invading Afghanistan, then Iraq, just 2 years before Katrina makes landfall.
We had spent billions of dollars and countless lives in overseas operations at the expense of levees. We have been busy fighting outside, and we failed to guard our own back door.
We are dealing with one of the worst natural disasters in our nation's history.
As the waters of Lake Pontchartrain flood into New Orleans, hundreds of residents are killed. Tens of thousands are displaced.
you had an entire American city essentially wiped off the map while an American government stood by and watched.
President Bush, returning to D.C. from vacation, diverts his flight to watch the unfolding crisis from 2,500 feet above.
It is a cataclysmic failure on every level.
Nowhere is the devastation greater than in the largely African-American Lower Ninth Ward.
The images from Hurricane Katrina of people clinging to life on rooftops has been burned into my memory, my conscience.
Without adequate food, water, shelter, or medical aid, residents are left on their own to survive.
It's a disgrace. We've been sleeping in the street for 5 days and nights. Somebody has to come to our rescue.
I got to Katrina as a reporter 3 days after the storm. I had been in Iraq 3 weeks before. It was disturbing how familiar the scene was of this destroyed infrastructure, civilian population in need, and there being no government to meet that human need.
Buses are loading up on Top Gold Street!
And like in Iraq, when the U.S. military first arrived in New Orleans, the health and safety of the local inhabitants didn't appear to be the mission.
A black helicopter literally came into New Orleans amidst the worst of the tragedy. And it turns out that they had been ordered into this federal building because there were blank passports there. We undertook this expensive and elaborate rescue effort to get blank passports out of a building in New Orleans rather than to save people. And that, to me, kind of symbolized also the fact that sometimes the federal government can have its own priorities, and they're not human priorities.
There's an old saying, when your only tool is a hammer, every problem looks like a nail, which might explain why law enforcement came down so hard on survivors in the Big Easy.
The crisis in New Orleans was presented as if this was a crisis of security in terms of law and order and violence, and that the appropriate response was militarized policing.
With many of the jail facilities flooded, a makeshift holding facility is built in the city's bus terminal. People call it Camp Greyhound. Over 1,200 residents are rounded up and cycled through the jail. Basic rights are ignored. Many are never charged with a crime. Most are African American.
You see, you know, the overreaction to people of color getting water, say, for their survival, as opposed to white people getting water. The white people are doing it to live, and the black people are looters.
We see America's prejudices start to manifest in mass, senseless, unnecessary tragedies.
So at one point, people are trying to walk out of New Orleans, and they're crossing the Danziger Bridge, and police on the other side are trying to turn them back.
All right, where are they at? We're on the west side. Where are they?
In the bloodiest incident of police violence, New Orleans police officers in a commandeered budget rental truck unleash a storm of gunfire into an entirely black crowd.
I see you running. Shut up!
Two people are killed, including a 40-year-old mentally disabled man shot 5 times in the back.
It was almost as if it was to send a message, that people should not get out of line, people should be afraid.
With the breach of 3 levees protecting New Orleans, the landscape of the
While survivors wait in vain for help from the government, celebrities band together for hurricane relief. During the live fundraiser, Kanye West indicts the sitting president.
George Bush doesn't care about black people.
When I saw Kanye West say that George Bush doesn't care about black people, I felt like he was telling me what I already knew. Well, you cannot call it a natural disaster unless you believe that it is, in fact, natural for a government to neglect its citizens of color in such a way.
Under mounting pressure to do something, Bush sends in reinforcements to help the National Guard, mobilizing U.S. Army troops to New Orleans.
Today, I order the Department of Defense to deploy additional active duty forces to the region.
Many of the troops had recently returned from combat tours.
They had been steeled and forged on the battlefields of Baghdad and Fallujah. Their training, their experiences, in some ways hardwired them to behave more like occupiers and less like helpers. They were the wrong tool for the job.
Soldiers wandering around as they were in Iraq, unable to really deal with the fundamental problems that the society faced. They couldn't even rescue people who were trapped in their homes because, you know, it wasn't Zodiacs and, you know, chainsaws and this sort of civil defense equipment. It was Heckler and Koch machine guns and armored personnel carriers, all of which were largely useless. All that produces a mentality of warfare and repression.
On the anniversary of 9/11, Bush himself finally arrives in New Orleans, landing on an aircraft carrier docked just offshore.
4 years after the frightening experience of September the 11th, Americans have every right to expect a more effective response in a time of emergency. When the federal government fails to meet such an obligation, I, as president, am responsible for the problem and for the solution.
The mightiest government on earth can do better than abandon people in this way within our own country.
And we'll once again show the world that the worst adversities bring out the best in America.
Katrina made it obvious that despite all the weaponry in the world and all of the intelligence in the world, that in the case of a storm in New Orleans, we were unable to take care of our own.
But the tragedy of Katrina came out of a much deeper and darker Cold War history, where a narrow view of national security justified oppressing innocent civilians. Stability at any cost.
We've got both sides of the road engulfed.
Wildfires rage in Northern California.
It's not looking good for getting people out.
The Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, deploys.
FEMA often is a very good and useful piece of the government. But FEMA has gotten a bad reputation, partly because it has been run by incompetence.
During Hurricane Katrina, FEMA's bad reputation was earned. The man Bush appointed to run FEMA was a Republican insider and an expert in Arabian racehorses with no experience in disaster planning.
FEMA and the government should have came in here the very next morning when all this shit happened.
Making FEMA an easy target.
The man running FEMA, he's an asshole.
There were a few disasters I was on where it was recommended that, you know, after hours, you don't walk around with your FEMA jacket on.
First of all, FEMA is the agency that's responsible for emergency response, but it's also the agency that's responsible for continuity of government.
Continuity of government, or COG, is a set of elaborate plans to ensure that no matter what happens, the U.S. government elite and its institutions will survive.
Enemy jet bombers carrying nuclear weapons can sweep over a variety of routes and drop bombs on any important target in the United States.
plan was born in the early days of the Cold War when Americans lived under the constant threat of nuclear annihilation. Citizens were reassured that plans were in place to keep them alive.
These facts may save your life.
While privately, officials admitted few could be saved.
It was emotional management to make the American people feel okay.
What you continually see is that the government is more interested in continuing its own power and its own authority than it is at seeing after the basic needs of its people.
FEMA's forerunner agency was responsible for securing and protecting top government officials. With an emergency declared and the Constitution effectively suspended, the post office would be in charge of registering the nation's dead. The National Park Service would run the refugee camps. The Department of Agriculture would distribute rationed food, while below ground, government officials continue to run the show.
The seat of local government has moved to a point some 6 miles out of town. Buried in a hill is a blast-proof, radiation-proof operations center where government can continue to function.
Billions were spent on these secret plans to protect the government elite and the institutions of state in the event of a Soviet attack.
Thousands of demonstrators opposed to the Vietnam War assembled in the nation's capital for a mass protest.
But as American society began to unravel in the 1960s, the government began to see the movements for civil rights and against the Vietnam War as just as big a threat to national security as an incoming Soviet missile. And now the government's law enforcement and national security resources are tasked with confronting this new enemy within.
We see that the government is treating its own people as if they are threats to the government and that they need to be treated as enemies of the state.
The students whose activities you have just witnessed are toying with treason. The communists have admittedly chosen the minds of our youth as a number one area for their insidious attack.
Everything from the FBI to the CIA to the National Guard have been mobilized as defenses against national threats.
The federal government was involved in contingency plans to round up dissidents.
My own grandfather had to testify before the House Un-American Activities Committee to deny he was a member of the Communist Party.
Civil rights leaders, now considered heroes of American democracy, were seen as part of a communist plot and as a threat to national security.
J. Edgar Hoover particularly picks out Martin Luther King for special, not just surveillance, but infiltrate and disrupt the efforts of the civil rights movement.
The FBI begins a massive covert counterintelligence operation known as COINTELPRO.
It comes out of the Cold War, surveillance state born out of controlling the internal population.
Agents send Martin Luther King Jr. a letter urging him to commit suicide. They infiltrate the Black Panthers and turn them against each other by spreading false rumors. Others are shot by police.
It frequently sounds crazy if you say these things, but all of this stuff is a matter of public record, right? There is thousands of pages of documents. You don't get more substantiated than that.
But the covert efforts to contain and control the movement fail. And when Martin Luther King Jr. is assassinated in April 1968, riots break out in over 100 cities.
In America, black people are treated very much as colonized people because we're used, we're brutalized. The police in our community occupy our area, our community, and the foreign troop occupies territory.
For a government focused on its own survival at any cost, the enemy was now inside the house. And the vast apparatus of a system supposedly there to protect all its citizens was turned against some of them. And those under attack began to fight back.
We're going to walk on this racist power structure, and we're going to say to the whole damn government,
Stick them up. This is a hold-up. We come for what's ours.
In the face of a perceived homegrown rebellion, the Pentagon draws up Operation Garden Plot, a detailed blueprint for how the U.S. military would deploy simultaneously to 25 American cities to put down racial unrest. Drills are held, but for now, Operation Garden Plot isn't mobilized. And by the 1970s, the civil rights movement is neutralized through infiltration, arrest, and assassination. But a new perceived threat to national security emerges. Nicaragua, 1979. A U.S.-backed dictator is toppled in Central America by leftist rebels. By the time Ronald Reagan takes office in 1981, the region is in flames. And many in the American elite are convinced a new existential threat is right at our front door.
El Salvador is nearer to Texas than Texas is to Massachusetts. Nicaragua is just as close to Miami, San Antonio, San Diego, and Tucson as those cities are to Washington. Only last week, an official of the Soviet Union reiterated Brezhnev's threat to station nuclear missiles in this hemisphere, 5 minutes from the United States.
Hollywood helped spread Reagan's fear of a red planet. The popular 1984 movie Red Dawn imagines the American heartland invaded by ruthless Cuban troops. But in reality, it's America's anti-communist allies that begin committing atrocities against their own people.
Death squads are believed to be responsible for more than half of the political murders committed.
And when news makes its way back home, many Americans begin to question U.S. support for hardline regimes in Central America.
U.S. support for the repressive governments in Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras, and support for the counter-revolutionary Contra forces that were fighting the Sandinista government in Nicaragua provoked serious opposition from American citizens.
As a new protest movement gathers steam, deep in the basement of the White House, a little-known national security advisor begins drawing up an exercise to game out how to locate and forcibly detain dissidents if the U.S. government decides to invade Central America.
Oliver North had written a proposal called Rex 84 that proposed rounding up political dissidents who opposed the Reagan administration funding right-wing death squads in Latin America and interning those people in camps.
Who were those dissidents? Those dissidents were very often members of the Catholic Church, Quakers, peace groups.
The agency that will create the camps and hold the dissidents? FEMA. The Federal Emergency Management Agency.
The fantasy slash justification for infiltrating, disrupting, and spying on these totally legal, peaceful lobbying and protest organizations was this fantasy that they were vehicles of foreign communist infiltration. And they were not. They were American citizens exercising their rights to try and oppose the misuse of their tax money in the support of really fascistic regimes in Central America.
Rex 84 never happened, but the government has interned people who have done nothing wrong in the past, and they have considered doing it again.
I will die on my feet before I'll live on my knees. It's as simple as that.
April 29th, 1992. Los Angeles residents take to the streets to protest the beating of Rodney King and the acquittal of the LAPD officers who did it. The city erupts in flames. As local police struggle to contain the violence, the Pentagon activates Operation Garden Plot, the Vietnam-era military operation to squash domestic unrest.
And let me assure you, I will use whatever force is necessary to
to restore order.
If you have a government that wants to create the narrative that there are scary brown and black people who want to take your kids and take your job and have this terrible revolution that's going to hurt you, what better way to create that than to put some tanks out there, shoot some tear gas at these folks, shoot them with rubber bullets, kill a few, and then the madder and more upset they get, the more evidence you have that, look, look what's happening.
Hey, you two, come on.
I'm an innocent
victim. Let's go. Yeah, we all are.
But as the government once again focuses on maintaining control in black communities, they overlook a growing movement of white, self-proclaimed patriots who are organizing and taking up arms.
All of these groups from the beginning were deeply engaged with this idea that it was their duty as a well-armed militia to fight against tyranny, as they saw it, encroaching on the lives of U.S. citizens.
As President Bush celebrates the end of the Cold War.
This is a time when the future seems a door you can walk right through, into a room called tomorrow.
Patriots fear America's tomorrow will be as part of the so-called New World Order, in which the U.S. government bends to the will of the United Nations.
Like any true freedom fighter, I will die on my feet before I'll live on my knees. It's as simple as that.
These groups have convinced themselves the government will turn its command and control infrastructure and its supposed fleet of black helicopters against its own citizens who oppose surrendering America's independence. As the Patriot movement grows, it begins to associate the agency designed to ensure continuity of government with this dark plot to control their lives.
FEMA was incorporated as a federal agency under President Carter and pretty much immediately became the subject of conspiracy theories. Patriot movements were claiming in newsletters that FEMA was creating concentration camps and that Patriots were going to be rounded up and put in camps.
It's all there. All the government documents, all the government admissions, a civilian inmate labor camp program run by the Army, where they're at, how they're going to break the families up, and where the children go, and the forced inoculations, and everything. I mean, it just boggles the mind that all of this is happening.
It had some weird elements. Militia movements became convinced that FEMA was going to put people in concentration camps with the help of the Bloods and the Crips. By the 1990s, they actually believed that the federal government was directly waging war on them.
The government's actions to rein in some of these law-breaking, heavily armed groups serve only to fuel their paranoia. Just months after Bill Clinton takes office, federal agents raid a radical Christian cult in Waco, Texas, and a vicious firefight breaks out. 76 members are killed in the ensuing inferno, including 25 children.
We did everything we could to avoid the loss of life. They made the decision to immolate themselves, and I regret it terribly, and I feel awful about the children.
For many on the fringes of the right-wing conspiracy world, Waco is a catalyzing moment. One of them is a 24-year-old Gulf War veteran. He would later write that the true horror of the event had been held back by the media, which didn't air images of the carnage, so people, quote, didn't care when these families died a slow, torturous death at the hands of the FBI. And 2 years to the day after Waco, this angry young veteran would rock the foundations of America's national security state. A massive bomb goes off at a federal building in Oklahoma City, killing 168, including 19 children at a daycare center.
There are those who hate our government so much that they're willing to conduct acts of terrorism directed at innocent civilians.
was one of the most devastating domestic terror attacks in U.S. history up until that point.
Cold War era, we had this paranoid kind of mentality. The threat is out there, it's external. And so there's America, right? And it's spending like trillions of dollars on its national security apparatus, the CIA, the FBI, whatever, blah, 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 blah. The threat turned out to be homegrown.
And White. The person behind the bombing was Timothy McVeigh. As an army gunner, McVeigh saw action in the first Gulf War.
Iraq's army is defeated. Our military objectives are met. We must now begin to look beyond victory in war. We must meet the challenge of securing the peace.
While others celebrate, McVeigh leaves the army and becomes radicalized by a series of events that would galvanize right-wing extremists for years to come.
Somebody like McVeigh thinks that they're actually a soldier in an invisible war.
The FBI raid on the heavily armed Christian cult in Waco, Texas that left 25 children dead left McVeigh outraged, not at the cult leaders, but at the U.S. government. And when President Clinton pushes hard to ban assault-style rifles, McVeigh and many on the right-wing fringes see an elite plot to rip away their freedoms.
I have heard people with a straight face saying, well, there are some adults that like to go target practice with these things. Well, they need to read a good book.
2 years to the day after Waco, in an act of retaliation, McVeigh bombs the federal building in Oklahoma City he believes houses the local FBI headquarters. After the attack, President Clinton becomes terrified that he might be the next target of a growing radical right-wing militia movement.
He greatly increased the amount of money we were spending on counterterrorism, and he also created a new position. And that new position was called the National Coordinator for Security and Counterterrorism. And I was that person. No longer was it just about nuclear war. What if there were a terrorist attack, like the Oklahoma City bombing? But it was in Washington, and it took out the White House.
Oklahoma City was a wake-up call, frankly. We should have learned that terrorism can be a domestic-based act of violence.
It's a rearguard action. They're caught with their pants down. They've been allowing this right-wing movement to get out of hand.
In a preview of conspiracy theories that will spiral around mass shootings 2 decades later, many in the militia movement refuse to believe Oklahoma City was the work of one of their own, but rather was a pretense by the government to mobilize against them.
The Oklahoma City bombing was immediately subject to conspiracy theories. Patriot movements viewed it as a false flag attack that had been perpetrated to make patriot movements look bad, discredit them, justify a crackdown against them.
False flag operations involved one group pretending to be another to shift blame.
There were congressional hearings after the Oklahoma City bombings where members of a Michigan militia were questioned by members of Congress, and the militia members speculated that the bombing had been undertaken by the CIA or that McVeigh had ties with the Japanese government. It's also where Alex Jones got his start, by claiming that Oklahoma City had been a false flag perpetrated by the government.
We've been investigating this tragedy for over 6 years. The amount of evidence is staggering. Out of hundreds of people we interviewed, we couldn't find a single person who said they'd heard only one explosion.
It's all part of a growing movement on the right, questioning elite control of society.
Militias aren't a terrorist organization, like Morris Dees has labeled us as being. And we're just average, ordinary, everyday folks just battling for our freedom and keeping our Constitution.
The militias are the bottom line and the last resort to the difference between freedom and slavery.
Those FBI guys over there and all over, they all know April 19th to beware. Don't make a move on anyone, because then I'm afraid that all hell's going to break loose.
A lot of these people are reacting to something very real. but they're doing it in totally crackpot and hateful ways that exacerbate the problem.
White revolution.
White revolution.
There's a general sense of growing insecurity, in part due to rising inequality. And so instead of fixing their sights on the real enemy, which is the elites who are ripping them off, they attack other victims of the same process, right? People of color, immigrants.
Congratulations, Mr. President.
Under President Barack Obama, there's a surge in right-wing militia activity. Groups grow from 149 in 2008 to 1,360 in 2012. And under Trump, militias go mainstream, holding large public rallies, many purchasing arsenals of high-powered weaponry. This member of the Virginia branch of a militia known as the Ghost Squad was in Charlottesville and says the militia movement has spread throughout society.
There's police officers that are militiamen. There are first responders that are militiamen. There's people in the churches that are militiamen. We stand for our God, our country, and our families. We, the people, and we will stand for what's right, and we will win this fight.
And while the U.S. government has often underestimated or downplayed the threat of militias, Trump appears to actively encourage them. And one militia makes international news when they try to act on his perceived call to arms.
We begin with stunning allegations about a plot to overthrow the state government in Michigan, to kidnap the governor, attack the police, and attempt to ignite a civil war in the U.S.
In September 2020, 13 men, including members of a Michigan militia known as the Wolverine Watchmen, are arrested for plotting to kidnap the governor of Michigan, Gretchen Whitmer. Two are former Marines, but they all appear to share the belief that big government is the enemy. And the Michigan governor's COVID-19 policies were part of a larger plan to strip away their rights.
The irony is that militia movements are deeply afraid they were going to be rounded up in FEMA camps, but they don't seem to have a ton of historical awareness about who these tools of oppression have actually been used against.
There's a face and an image and a perspective that we associate with what is dangerous in this country. And that's what gets people killed.
And this is in America, right?
Spring 2020, possibly the largest mass protest movement America has seen, sweeps the nation with a simple message: Black Lives Matter. Behind the scenes, federal agents, including some from FEMA's parent department, Homeland Security, are monitoring activists, even snatching them off the streets. It's nothing new.
We've seen this happen for decades now. Every time there's a moment of either civil unrest or a moment of a protest movement, we see the government start to use that apparatus again and treat its own people as if they're enemies of the state.
In 2018, the FBI implemented a program titled Iron Fist, targeting African-American activists. Black extremists are listed at the top of the Bureau's counterterrorism priorities, above even groups like Al-Qaeda. And yet, over the last 25 years, only a handful of so-called black extremists have been tied to acts of violence.
This overdeveloped surveillance state is born out of the Cold War. It is a very, very long history that goes way back in American history, through the 60s, 50s, beyond World War II, into the Red Scare of the 20s, labor unions, socialists, feminists. African Americans and other communities of color that struggle for full civil rights. These people have always been attacked.
And now, once again, the vast machinery of a system there to protect its citizens is turned on its own.
The Department of Homeland Security, through aviation security, maritime security, FEMA, port security, border security, cyber security, protects Americans at the one-yard line. But you go from Charlottesville in August 2017 to what happened in Portland.
Don't shoot.
And on the streets of Washington, D.C., the Trump administration has used the Department of Homeland Security as a hammer to pursue its aggressive agenda.
I honor law enforcement. We wouldn't be here right now if it wasn't for law enforcement. We have to stop this horrible left-wing ideology that seems to be permeating our country.
We've seen a consistent use of DHS as a secret police for an executive branch. We're seeing Americans picked off the street, treated as if they are enemies of the state, treated as if they are terrorists, and disappear.
There's a face and an image and a perspective that we associate with what is dangerous in this country. And, you know, and it's imbued within essentially my melanin. And that is what gets people killed.
Both hands. Put your fucking hands up right now.
Stand up.
Just is too many people. And if you think that that trend can continue and that price is worth your feelings of security, then I would like to understand what your ideas of America are. I would like to understand what your idea of freedom is, because it is certainly different than mine. Because in your idea of freedom, there is no room for me.
What started out as the war on terror has become the forever war, with any number of enemies in any number of places.
Many of the operations that are happening are so secretive that even the American people are not aware who the enemy is.
America is constantly at war everywhere around the globe. We're still bleeding our blood of our country every single day.
And meanwhile, back home, we're dying constantly in just really overtly incompetent ways.